If you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
All right, welcome to Witch Police Radio. I'm here with a returning guest, and I think that I have a lot of things I want to ask you about your new record. It's cool because, I mean, like, when I first met you, it was on a different, completely different show. I was guest hosting on Mom's House, which was a great show. And I know I keep talking, but whenever it comes up with someone I've interviewed on there, I keep talking about how great it was because it was such a cool concept. And
yeah, it was. Yeah.
But it's nice to that of all the people that I interviewed on there, pretty much everyone I've had back on the podcast in this context to talk about too. So it's kind of a cool. It's cool that there's so many people in Winnipeg doing these like interactive ways to promote local music and talk about local music. And so I'm very happy to have you back on the show. That was a rambling introduction. And I think the best way to start this off properly is if you want to introduce yourself and just give a bit of background about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, sure. My name is Jared Adams. I'm a local alt-rock musician. I don't really prefer the title singer-songwriter anymore because I feel like that usually applies to someone who sits down with acoustic guitar and sings a ballad. I don't really do that. So yeah, local alt-rock musician, and I've been playing in the music scene for, oh god, I don't know, too long now to try to count and remember, but quite a while, since out of high school, basically, in numerous different bands. And then just before the pandemic, I started a solo project, and I put out a record then, and now we're here with the second record coming out 4 years later, or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, time doesn't exist anymore, right? The pandemic has completely screwed with everyone's concept of time. So, yeah, at some point after the last record, this new one's coming out. That's really all that people need to know. So I want to sort of focus on, to start with, you know, the genre thing. I know everyone hates talking about that. And like you said, you're not a singer-songwriter anymore because of sort of what that carries with it, the idea of a coffeehouse folk singer sort of vibe.
Yeah.
But in listening to the stuff, you know, your singles and everything from this upcoming record, I don't know if you necessarily... Like, is alt-rock really the term anymore? Because it's drastically different.
I don't know, right? That's the other thing, too. It's like, I don't know where to put it. Like, one of the things, like, when I had a bio written for you recently, and one of the terms they used was indie-tronica.
Okay,
and I'm like, I guess that kind of applies. Like, there's, like, you know, there's some, like, synthesizers and drum machines and stuff, and it's kind of got that indie-rock sort of sound.
Yeah.
If you look at what, like, indie-rock is, I'm not really that either. That's more like, you know, those bands like Vampire Weekend and stuff like
totally.
That.
Totally, yeah.
It's hard to, I don't really know where to classify my music. That's why I just kind of say alt-rock's is sort of like a catch-all, I guess.
Well, and I think that, like, I mean, you know, again, it's a question that no one likes answering because it's so hard these days, especially with all these subgenres and stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, just comparing the last record to this one, I mean, I think the songwriting kind of behind everything is still there. I mean, you can see like a through line from record to record, but sonically, it's drastically different, and subject matter-wise too, which I want to get into, we'll talk about in a bit, but... So, you know, given that this has sort of all happened, these two records in a time where everything's been completely uncertain with the pandemic, you know, happening and now ending hopefully and shows happening again and just everyone's kind of chaotic. What has it been like being a solo artist sort of throughout this whole time, regardless of genre? I mean, this is something that you've taken on in the very inopportune time to be a solo artist.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I guess it sort of made things, I guess, a bit easier during the pandemic because there was a lot of like online performances and it's super easy to sit down and just plug in an acoustic and play. And that last record, those songs, I wrote them with the intent on sort of having them as acoustic songs that you could just play with chords or whatever. So that actually panned out not too bad. I ended up playing like a number of like online performances in the pandemic. But yeah, coming out of that now, like playing shows and stuff again, it's a bit harder as like a solo musician, because when I'm trying to put on a show with a full band, I have to like arrange, you know, five other people to be there and play. Yeah. And then sometimes some, like my regular drummer can't be here, so I got to find someone else. And I mean, that is the benefit, I guess, of like being a solo musician compared to a band. If so, say my drummer can't make it, I can find someone else to fill in. Whereas, you know, in Color by Numbers, the other band I play in, it's like if the drummer can't be there, it's like, well, that show is just not happening.
Right, because you have a set lineup and everyone is equally,
exactly. Yeah. It's sort of like these are the four people. Whereas with the solo project, I can kind of bring in people as I want and whatnot. And sometimes, like, I've played some shows as just a three piece, and I just had to figure out how to like combine all my guitar parts into one so that right. It still makes sense and fits the song.
Right. Well, I don't want to dwell on the pandemic, because I mean, I think I've talked about it excessively, and so has everyone else. But just coming out of that, I feel like the subject matter between the two records as well. I mean, the first one, you know, nostalgia was in the title. It's very much focusing on that kind of vibe, like reflecting on. It's more easygoing. This is a bit heavier and a bit. I don't know if it's more of a downer. I don't think it is, but it's focusing on some more serious issues that I think have kind of taken over in the public consciousness sort of since the pandemic and everything else has gone on for the last few years. What is the cause of the shift of tone? Is it just sort of taking in everything that's gone on in this dystopian future we're in right now, or what?
I mean, that's kind of part of it, but it's actually like, it actually goes back even further, because when I planned out Tragic Nostalgia, I actually had this album planned out as well as almost like a counterpoint to it. So I actually like had this album planned since like even before Tragic Nostalgia was written. I kind of like was thinking like Tragic Nostalgia would be this album that's like an introspective sort of me looking back on my past and in a tragic way, I guess. And then this album is sort of, I like to call it like my hot take on the world. And so it's sort of like my views on everything else. It's like not my past, or like, you know, it's sort of right. More based on how I see the world around me. And so it's totally meant to be like a counterpoint to Tragic Nostalgia, and I think it does that lyrically as well as like sonically too, because I've just like evolved in the way that I'm writing stuff, so it's kind of different in that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's almost I don't want to say it's shockingly different, because I mean, obviously, you know, you've written all kinds of music, you've been in different projects over the years and everything, but it's definitely like when I first started hearing the singles coming out that you were releasing, I mean, the electronic stuff aside, the tone of it and sort of like, I almost wanted to call it at first like a sci-fi sort of vibe, but it's not, because it's right. Like, this is what we're actually living through. So what, I guess, like, do you consider it to be a concept record?
Yeah, like, it's a loose concept record. Like, you know, it's kind of, looking at sort of the world and all the problems and then sort of my take on it. And every song has its own sort of theme, and they kind of focus on a lot of stuff based on like technology and the future and politics and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it does have like a loose concept to it. You know, it's not. Not like a story or anything there necessarily, but
yeah, but it did the overall subject matter kind of connects from song to song.
Yeah.
What, why that stuff? I mean, like you said, you've been working on this for a while. This was an idea you had, like you said, a couple minutes ago, well before even Tragic Nostalgia, but what sort of, I mean, we're surrounded by this. Is it, why write about this? Is it to get mire yourself further into kind of the, again, I don't want to say it's depressing, but it's like this kind of negativity. I know you're not talking about negative things only in the record, but do you know what I mean? Right. Like, we're sort of surrounded by, especially with technology and with AI and all of these things that you explore sort of on the album and in the promotional stuff as well, with the music video and sort of some of the stuff you're posting on social media. It's all very Terminator 2, but real.
Yeah, totally. No, I think I know what you mean. And I think I've always just sort of had like, I've always been more attracted to art in general that has like a darker tone.
Sure.
Like, even when it comes to like movies and like paintings or posters or whatever, stuff like that, photography, I've always liked the stuff that has more of a darker tone. Like, especially in music, like a lot of the guys in Color by Numbers love bands like Wolfpack and like a lot of that 70s sort of funk stuff. And I just really, I find it too happy.
Sure.
I don't really
sure.
care for it. So I think that's kind of why these songs end up being sort of the way they are. And yeah, you're right. It's not necessarily a fully pessimistic view. I think it's kind of meant to be more of like a somewhat of a critique slash also sort of like, I don't really want to say like a warning, but the idea of sort of like making sure that we're on the right track with the way we're doing things, I guess.
Right, right.
natural phenomenon. You're here and then you're gone. Don't know just where you're from. The beauty in your eyes, the love that you despise.
I guess with that in mind, who is it for? I mean, are you preaching to the choir with this, or are you trying to sort of maybe make people think about some of these topics if they haven't considered them before?
I mean, I would say first and foremost is for me. It's just totally cathartic.
But... right on.
But I do think, though, that it's not necessarily, like, yeah, it's a bit preaching to the choir. I'm sure that people who can relate to it will enjoy listening to it. But I do also think that I hope it kind of makes people think about certain things. Like, there's a few songs I think have a bit of a message to it, where it's, I hope people will kind of pick up on that and kind of maybe consider what they do in their life and how it kind of affects the greater world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of the goal of any record with a message, right? Is you want people to enjoy it on one hand for just to enjoy listening to it, but then, yeah, also maybe consider what it's actually talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I've also always, like, a lot of it comes from just the music I like listening to, and I definitely like listening to music that kind of makes me think and sort of, like, I'm more of a fan of, like, cryptic lyrics, and I've noticed a lot lately with a lot of music that, a lot of times the story and the characters or whatever, the message is just like laid out for you there. And like, yeah, I get a lot of people like, who've been talking about my songs or whatever, kind of like, what is this about? What's this part about? And it's like, well, it's kind of, it's meant to be up for your own interpretation, right? Like, I know what I wrote about, but it's also like, you know, I want you to find your own meaning in it. Yeah, some of the songs have a bit more obvious meaning, but
yeah,
that's kind of my take on it.
What do you think is the cause of that, though? I mean, I think you're right. I've definitely heard a lot of songs in recent years that are very unambiguous. Like, it's just right there, you know, very literal. Why do you think that's happened? Like, what's happened to us culturally that we've sort of moved away from, you know, more abstract, not everyone, obviously, but just in the mainstream, I guess.
I want to think, like, it kind of is that whole sort of phase of, like, rock and pop sort of thing, how you have, like, these, like, over each decade, kind of pop will come into vogue and then it'll fall out and then rock will come in back and forth. And I think usually when the rock music's kind of up there, that's when some of those lyrics are a bit more cryptic. And I think maybe a lot of rock musicians, you know, when they're writing their own songs, they don't really want to, like, say exactly what's on their mind. Whereas I think we have a lot of these pop songs that aren't even written by the artist, they're written by other people. They're just like, whatever.
They're written by committee,
Yeah, exactly. So it's sort of, I think the lyrics are a bit more meant to be easily digestible by a general audience.
Okay. No, that's fair.
Like, that'd be my thought on it. I'm not totally sure why. That's my my going theory right now.
Well, I often wonder, like when I hear stuff like that too, I often wonder if it is to kind of link back with the whole technological side of things. Like, I wonder if social media and the internet and all of these things are making it so everything is out on the table anyway already. Like, no one is mysterious anymore, right? Everyone's got 7 million pictures on Instagram every day, and they're sharing literally everything they eat and all this stuff. So it almost, I don't know. I wonder if like maybe people just don't. They share so much.
They don't care about hiding anything anymore. Yeah,
yeah. There's nothing subtle anymore. It's all just like, here's me, here's everything.
I mean, could be part of it. I know that like definitely social media affects how music is written. Like, you think about all these songs now, just like kick right into a chorus in the first 2 seconds or whatever. It's like you have 5 seconds to grab someone's attention on Spotify before they click next, right? So I'm sure that like social media does affect what people write their lyrics about, because it's got to be like, how can I make this relate to a million people as opposed to 5 people, right?
Right.
So you get more streams and whatnot.
Or relate to a million people immediately rather than having a lead time.
Like not over time. Like right away.
How does that affect you as an artist then? Knowing that, I mean, you know, obviously being a local artist and playing not necessarily pop music, you maybe have a little more leeway in that sense. But I mean, knowing that people are listening probably on streaming and they're going to be, you're going to have to grab them sort of right away. Does that affect how you structure your songs or how you write, even write hooks and things like that?
I don't think so. I mean, I do actually, like, now that I said the first 2 songs on the record, like, basically kick right off the choruses, but, like, that was not really, like, intentionally done like that. It was more just, like, especially with this record, I was really trying to let the songs be what they wanted to be as opposed to trying to force them into anything. So it was sort of, like, even if I had a cool idea, if it didn't work with the song, I would just scrap it.
Right.
So I don't think I really, and some of them are like, kind of long, too, like, you know, longer than your 2-minute, 3-minute like radio-friendly song now. So it's sort of, I don't really kind of let that stuff like get in my way. I just write what I want to write.
That's good.
Maybe, you know, maybe I would be like a huge artist by now if I had just started writing 2-minute pop songs, right? But it's not what I want to do.
Right on. Yeah. No, and you shouldn't too. I mean, you obviously keep doing what you're doing. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about too is the whole AI concept, because you focused it on it so much in the way that you're promoting this record and things like that. I see a lot of takes on AI from creative people, and usually they're negative. Usually they're very much like, this is killing everyone's jobs. It's going to take over. We're all going to be, you know.
I mean, that's what they said about like drum machines and stuff. And
that's right.
Still drummers,
well, what is your take on it? I mean, obviously you have embraced it enough that you're using it to sort of you know, get this album out there. But what's your take on AI as a creative tool?
I think it's a great creative tool. Like, I think it's going to like allow it's. I can understand the angle for people who are, especially for people who are artists, digital artists and whatnot, how it makes it so much easier for the average person to create something. But it's really like, I mean, I've done a lot of like AI art now. It's not as easy as just putting in a single sentence or whatever, or 2 words. Like, it takes a lot of work to get the right thing. Like, the album cover is an AI generated images. And it took me like hundreds of iterations, literally, to get one that looked kind of like me.
Yeah. Like, it does though. It's cool.
Yeah, but it also had like all the cool stuff going on. Like, that was totally random. Like, one of those came up and iterated over and over and over again. And then I'd take it to another program where I could like just change certain little spots of it to try to get it to work. Like, it's more than just, you know, pressing a few buttons.
Yeah.
So I think it's a tool that's people are going to use a fair amount in the future. And it's going to sort of democratize art in a way, I guess, and allowing everyone to have the ability to create what they visually want to create, and even when it comes to like music and other stuff and video now, it's
Do you think there's a point where it can take over from the creative human, or do you think there's always going to be that limitation on something computerized?
Yeah, I guess the thing that I'm sort of afraid of-ish is when it gets to the point where, like, you go on Netflix or you go on Spotify, you say, hey, I want to listen to a brand new Beatles song, and it can just create a brand new Beatles song in the same style, vocal sound great, lyrics sort of similar to a Beatles song. Or like going on Netflix and saying, hey, I want to watch Star Wars Episode 10, right? Or whatever that doesn't exist. And it just creates that for you. And I think that, like, as a musician, I guess the one benefit I have is that, like, or as musicians we have, is the live performance aspect of it.
Like, of course.
I think that'll eventually happen. There eventually will be AI that will put on a live performance and people will love going to see that. But I think that's a little whiles away still. Like, I don't think that's... Well, maybe in my lifetime. I don't know.
I hope it's a while away, but it's crazy how fast, like, this stuff changes. I mean, I remember when first started, like, you know, AI was first sort of available to the public not even that long ago, and everyone was generating images like crazy. And then now, you look at it now, even a couple of years later, and it's the quality and the accuracy and stuff, it's insane.
Well, that music video I put up for Welcome to the Metaverse that I made using AI, and it got a bunch of jankiness going. And that one, like, even that was a lot of work. Like, that was like 3 10-hour days to make that thing. Like, it was a lot of work put into that. But it's kind of janky and whatnot. And then, like, 2 days before I release it, OpenAI releases their video thing, And it's able to just like create this video of like a woman walking through the streets of Tokyo, and it looks like an actual video. There's no, like, a little bit of weirdness, but like it's way better than the program I was using. It's just like, it's crazy.
And I'm sure like a year from now or like 6 months from now, it's going to be the next level too. Yeah. Well, I mean, is there a point in the future where your album, this album you're putting out, gets made by AI? Like, do you think we could be at a point where someone could type in the right information and you know, the right prompts and generate essentially what you're releasing?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I you're talking about how I post some AI stuff on social media, and I've been doing this sort of like this kind of thing where I have the AIs taking over my Instagram account. And then yesterday I had it create a song, and I actually used an AI program to write a song. And like, I mean, you can tell it's weird and digital, not like actually played instruments. But if you were just listening to it as background music or like in a TV commercial or something, you probably wouldn't even realize that it's like an AI generated song.
Yeah,
and it's
crazy.
Just like, so I think they'll get, and the program I use for that can actually do like vocals with lyrics and stuff. You can actually put in the lyrics you want it to have. And it's like, yes. I mean, there's sure there'll come a point in the next few years where somebody could just basically create this album with a few of the right keywords.
But they can't play it live yet. So you got that.
I still got that. And that's my favorite part. I mean, as much as I love studio stuff, I love being on stage. And
Well, but the AI songs, I've actually, a friend of mine has been making AI theme songs for me, and every episode I'm using a different one. No one's said anything yet, so people might not realize it, but they're very short, and they say just like sings or raps or whatever, you know, Witch Police Radio. And then it ends and goes into the interview. But I don't know.
That's awesome.
I did an opera one. It was a hip hop one. It's ridiculous. In the future. But about the live stuff, I mean, how does this translate now to a live setting? Because, I mean, again, comparing it to the previous album, this has a lot more, synthesizers and more electronic elements to it. Is it playable as it is on the record live, or is it tweaked a bit?
It's going to have to be tweaked a bit, yeah. I mean, I've done a few shows now. We've done some of these songs, and they're definitely... It's about finding that balance of seeing what we can do live in terms of the instrumentation we have versus, like, trying not to stray too far from the sound of the record. And that's one of those things I learned, like, a long time ago, was sort of that the live show doesn't have to be, like, just the record but louder. And I actually prefer that. Like, if I'm going to go see a band, I don't really want to see them play note for note just louder. Like, if I want to listen to the record cranked, I'll just crank the record at home, right?
And save the money and save going out and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's definitely an element to that where you want the live performance to be something different and have its own sort of, be like its own sort of beast that's different than the record, and that's something people want to see. So definitely got to do some tweaking and sort of figure out what are the key parts of all these songs to bring in, like what synth line is the important line or what's the guitar part that's important, and sort all that out.
Well, and then like I guess a brother to that question is you know, we were talking about earlier how being a solo artist made things somewhat easier during the pandemic because, you know, you don't have to rely on having a set band and everything. How do these songs work solo? Can you take these songs and play them acoustically, or is it too weird to take them out of the context?
Yeah, I've tried some of them. Some of them work, some of them don't work as well. I think it's maybe more just like messing around with them long enough until I find a way to play it that does make sense in the context. Like there's one of the songs that's basically just two chords the entire time, but it's all about like different layers of stuff. So it's like playing it acoustic, it kind of just becomes like not super interesting.
Right.
So I think it's just a matter of trying to figure out, like, is there a way to do that acoustically? But not all of them work yet that I figured out.
Is there a way to play them solo using a more electronic type instruments? Like, could you play these with a synth, or is that just too out of the original context? I mean, I don't know if someone wants to sit there listening to a guy playing a synth and vocals only. I don't know if that's even a thing anymore, but...
There are some artists like Alex Mayer, Rihanna, in Winnipeg. Like, you know, setup of drum machines and stuff. And it's like, that would be, I would love to get into that and try that, but that just seems like it's a whole different perspective and a different way from how I make music now, that it's like, it would be a huge learning curve probably. But I think like, if I were to do something like that, I could probably figure out a way to like translate these songs into that sort of context.
Yeah. I imagine using those loopers, takes like a lot of practice to get the timing right.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen Alex play a few times.
I've never even experimented with them. So
yeah. It's just the accuracy of it, just doing it live. It's incredible to watch. Because you just see someone playing every instrument, just hitting a button, then going to the next, and it's flawless. But yeah, I imagine the learning curve's got to be high. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So where can people hear this? I mean, at the time this comes out as a podcast, I think it'll be imminently about to be released. But what's sort of the best way, once it's available to the world, for people to check it out?
Well, the best way to buy it on Bandcamp so I can make some money.
Yeah. No, for
but
sure.
If you just want to listen to it, it'll be on all the streaming services like Spotify, Apple, and all that. Something came.
from the shopping malls, escaping suburban life, living in the basement thrall. South End kids, stealing all the cigarettes, smoking in the bathroom stalls, not knowing who they really are. South End kids.
And then you've released singles sort of leading up to this for a while now, right? So have all the songs been released, or is it just a handful of those?
So there's 10 songs in total. I think I've released 4 or 5.
Okay.
I can't remember
now. About half of it.
5, I think. Yeah, about half of it, yeah.
What has that process been like for you, did sort of slowly unveiling this record over the months?
I think it's been a good way to do it. Like, I've noticed it's sort of helped to kind of like grow a fan base and grow a following with it, because it's like, the last record, again, was released during the pandemic, so it wasn't really the same, but I did like one single a month before, and then the album came out.
Yeah.
And I think doing it this way, where I've had like a single every couple months, has been a bit more, it allows you to kind of build more of the hype or whatever to the album actually being released. So I think it's been a good way to do it, but it's a ton of work though.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
So chaotic. Like, a song Inundated is just like, it basically came to life, me just being busy all the time.
Had you already recorded everything and had it all finished before you started releasing?
Yeah, the record's been done since like January of last year.
Okay. How does that feel now, knowing that, do the songs seem old to you, or are you still super pumped about them just based on the fact that they're coming out soon?
No, I'm still pumped about them. Like, I still actually like put on the record sometimes and listen to it just like all the way through. Even though some of the songs like I wrote like 4 years ago. But yeah, I still quite enjoy them. And I think that's probably the work I'm most proud of in terms of anything I've ever put out. Yeah, I'm super excited for people to hear, because it's just like, it's been such a long time in the works.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. And obviously, again, it's timely with the subject matter too. I think that people can relate.
Yeah, and that's kind of it too. Like, I really want to make sure this album got out now, as opposed to like 5 more years from now or something.
Yeah, in which case we're completely overtaken by the robot overlords or whatever. And
yeah, exactly. It'll all be over anyway.
Yeah. So you have a release show coming up soon for this, right?
Yeah, March 29th at the Handsome Daughter.
Cool. And do you have who's playing with you? Do you have a band that sort of is the band for this project, or are you just finding individual people, or how is that working?
So I've got Mike McDermott, who also plays in Cub and Numbers. He's just playing on drums, and he played on the album as well. And then I have Brian Yo on bass, who also played on the album. And then Alex Kozov, another Cub and Numbers guy. I've just kind of pulled them all into this group.
Yeah, yeah.
He's playing some piano and keyboards. And I've got my friend Daniel Pearson on the guitar. So that's sort of the core lineup. And then I am going to be bringing in some guest musicians for the show. Basically, everyone who's on the album. So we got the horn section from Paul Sons.
Cool.
We got some strings. And it's going to be a crowded stage.
Yeah, it's not a giant stage either there. So it'll be fun to see, I think. Yeah, that's awesome. I was going to ask you something, and I'd completely, as soon as you mentioned horn section, I started thinking about horns, and then it's gone. But I know what I was going to ask. Obviously, the album release show, you're going to be playing stuff from the new record. That's going to be the focus. Is it too jarring to play songs from Tragic Nostalgia mixed in with these? In future, I'm thinking about you playing shows, after the album's out. Is it too weird to sort of combine the two, or do you think that they flow well enough together?
I don't think so. Like, we actually are going to be doing a few songs off Tragic Nostalgia. There's a couple, like a song, the song Tides on that album is very much, that kind of almost influenced a lot of what I did on this album, because when I put that album out, and everyone's like, oh, Tides, this is a really cool song. It had like the electronic drums and sort of the building guitar parts and stuff. And so I kind of like leapt off from there. So yeah, that song fits in with everything else. So we'll do that one. And I think there's a few others that are sort of just more straightforward kind of rock songs that kind of just good like hype songs. So we're obviously going to include them in the set.
Awesome. And then do you have more shows planned like after this to sort of continue off the excitement and everything of the album release?
Nothing yet, but I've... hoping to get some festival dates this summer is sort of the plan, and then try to line some other stuff up. But nothing yet. I've just been too busy trying to plan this one to even think about like another show just yet.
Well, that's the other part of it too, right? Is it's such a one man job now, because everyone has to, especially because you're making the videos and all that as well, right? It's not just not just playing the song, someone else recording it, and then you're good, right? It's
walking away, everything else.
That's it's a lot of work. So this being a podcast, someone could hear it the day it comes out, and then the album's just about to be released, or they'll hear it like a year from now or whenever. What's the best way to sort of keep up with what you're up to as far as future shows or future recordings and that kind of thing?
Generally most active on Instagram at Jared Adams Music. You can also just go to jared-adams.com, and that'll have a redirect to all of my social medias and all that.
Cool. And then I'm assuming you'll put the show dates and stuff up there, or at all of them probably, right?
Yeah, it'll be up on all of them, yeah.
Is this getting a physical release or just digital?
I wanted to do just digital because it sort of fit with like the themes of the album, but I am getting a few CDs made, like super limited run, I think like 50.
Cool.
Just because there's like a few radio stations and stuff, and just, you know, some people just want to collect and buy CDs still, so.
That's what I want to
make. I mean, yeah, I know, exactly. So yeah. I'll send you one.
Yeah, awesome. Right on. I always have to ask, because I'm always, you know, in this case, I was legitimately curious because of the sort of the subject matter and the whole vibe of the record, right? I mean, it would have made sense to do it strictly digital. I actually
had plans to release it as an NFT. Kind of fell through.
Wow. Yeah, that's I don't know if I can get behind that. That whole universe of stuff is just completely, it's either over my head or like maybe I feel, I don't know. I can't do the NFTs. I think I just don't understand it.
It was more, well, Our Lady of Peace put out an album as an NFT, but it's sort of this thing where like you got the album and you got like a NFT image that was sort of the album cover. But they also sent you a whole bunch of other stuff, like a signed album cover
and stuff.
So there's like some of the bonuses. So I would have done something like that where it would have been like, yeah, you have the NFT, but you also get a bunch of other sort of swag and whatnot. That would have kind of been the plan.
Are NFTs even still a thing?
I don't know. It just seemed like a cool, modern, technological way to do it.
Yeah, right on. Okay,
it seemed like a fit with the rest of the album theme, you know?
yeah, for sure. So people should go to Bandcamp once the album's out. What is the release date of the album?
March 15th.
March 15th, okay, which will be right around the time this podcast comes out. So very soon, if you're listening on the day it gets released, and people should go to Bandcamp, stream it, wherever. Go to your website, go to your social media, and yeah, the show's on the 29th at the Daughter with a bunch of people on stage playing songs about our dystopian future.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, it was exciting to see it too, the lead up to this record, because I was hearing the singles as you were putting them out, and it didn't dawn on me at first that this was sort of the direction it was going until, you know, a few more songs came out and I started seeing the social media stuff. So I think, you've done a good job of sort of setting the scene of what the album's all about. So it's exciting.
Yeah, it's I haven't even really had a chance to soak it in, to be honest. I've just been so busy.
I believe it for sure.
yourself up to a big rocket ship. Fly to the moon and beyond it. Reach outer space. Don't stop till you're gone. 'Cause the world is going to flames. Yeah, the world.